listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 225 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me in person, right across from me, is Chris Robbie. I can even almost touch you from here.
How's it going? We're in the same place.
I know, it's going well. What a way to start the year off, having Chris here live in person. What do you think of the new place?
It's awesome. I was just going to say, so this is my first time I've been out to Oregon since the CD Baby moved to a new headquarters. It is very nice, and I have to say, having worked here now for 13 years, we've come a long way.
Yes, we have.
What'd you call them? Humble and somewhat dirty
beginnings. Remember when it was folding tables, broken chairs, and a pea-stained couch.
And yes, I do.
And it was. I did not make that up. But yes, place is nice. We're enjoying it. Can't wait till we're starting to get settled and start having more opportunities for artists to come by and events. And next time you're in town, we will do a live podcast.
That'll be awesome.
Where people can come and we'll publicize that. But we weren't quite ready for it yet. So we'll get to that. All right. Well, another great way that we're starting off the new year. We just announced and got quite a bit of press on the fact that in 2018, CD Baby artists, that's most of you listening to this podcast, CD Baby artists as a collective earned over $100 million. That's a lot of money.
It's amazing. And the previous year, it was what?
80. So that was a huge
growth. And, you know, I assume that adoption of streaming is... You know, partially to thank for that, for sure, but it's really exciting.
Yeah, very exciting news. It's the first time, obviously, we've cracked that $100 million artist earnings in a year. So big, big number. Very excited, very proud of all of you in the independent artist community. We've done this together. And everyone, even if your part was a meager piece of that, it's just points to the fact that, yes, there is opportunity. And you can make things happen as an independent artist. You don't need that label, people.
Right, right. Well, I wrote an article about this because we were very excited. And, you know, it's worth celebrating. It's great. But the caveat being that if all of our clients were fully monetized, that number could have been a lot bigger. And there's a number, you know, a staggering amount of our clients who have not taken advantage of YouTube monetization or sync licensing, and it's literally like a free checkbox. It costs you nothing to opt in for these services. So do it if you're listening.
Yeah, especially if you haven't been in your account in a while, you should get in there. Make sure that the video monetization for YouTube is checked. Sync licensing is checked. We've been doing a lot more with that lately, and more big placements and other things to get revenue rolling for artists. And Instagram and Facebook monetization, check that box. We just did our first initial payout for that. That's something that's brand new that those services just turned on, and we think it's going to be a big revenue stream. And if you haven't gone and checked that box, you should, or just verify. It's time to verify. So and then upgrade to publishing. We're seeing big growth in publishing revenue. So all these places where you might pick up a few more bucks.
Yeah, and go and add your own music to your Instagram stories. Every time I go in to look for my music, there's more and more of my songs. You know, I don't think we delivered our entire catalog all
they're
once
taking
to them,
it but, chunk by chunk.
But,
so.
But every time I go, there's more songs I can pick from and make really weird, disturbing videos.
So, yeah, I need to ask you about one of them. Yeah, exciting things. Excited for 2019. It's our first podcast of 2019. It's going to be a big year for us here at CD Baby. I think it's going to be a big year. I think I'm feeling good things for you and I, Chris.
You're right.
And for our artist community, it's going to be an awesome year. And so in 3 minutes or less, Chris, how did you spend your Christmas vacation musically? What did you do?
Okay,
anything of note?
All right. So Christmas vacation, I didn't really spend musically. It was kind of... family time and binge watching some stuff on Showtime. But that being said, I flew here to Portland, Oregon on Monday this week and landed in the afternoon, went straight to my friend Bob's studio and my band. Well, I shouldn't say my band, they're my friends, but they're my band when I'm in town. They got together and we recorded Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and then a little bit last night in this totally new way for me where I had sent them demos, like, you know, folky acoustic guitar demos with the instructions of, you know, mess this stuff up. So I went Monday and kind of heard what they had done over the last 6 months and then was able to kind of add my parts and shape some stuff. It was really cool. And had a few of those moments where things felt like they weren't working and banging your head against the wall. And then finally we tried something out of left field and everything clicked. And those moments where it's like hours of agony finally pay off and you're like, this is why I do it. This one moment of problem solving. So that was fun. And then last night I had a gig, which was great. A place called Alberta Street Pub, which is a really beautiful listening venue in Portland. You should play there if Small Town Poets does an acoustic show or something like that.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
That was fun. And then, by day this week, I've been here, which has been great.
Excellent.
It's been a good week.
Excellent. Well, my Christmas break, we talked about that single we launched, but the day after Christmas was the 20th anniversary of our second album, Listen Closely. And, of course, trying to do any sort of, like, 20th anniversary celebration. It's kind of poor timing. But last minute, I put together this little campaign. It wasn't really a campaign. It was an email. But I really thought what I wanted people to do, and what I wanted them to do, was to just go on Facebook and chatter about it. I put it together really quick, and we just saw an explosion of activity on Facebook. It somehow brought a lot of, I could tell it brought a lot of fans out of the woodwork that didn't even know we had a new album, but the things they were saying about our second album, Listen Closely, were very humbling and much appreciated. Some people calling it a masterpiece, some people saying it their favorite record, and not just like flippantly, like putting lots of detail, and some other things. There was a really big tearjerker story that somebody said that their son had turned them on to our music and he was serving in the military. He was killed in action in Afghanistan 8 years ago. And this was like December 27th was the 8th anniversary of his death, and said that he was a huge fan of your music and they played your music at his funeral. And just all that kind of stuff where you're just like, a lot of times I just feel like I'm in my room toiling away by myself. And that was that. So that just,
now I'm misty-eyed, which you can actually believe me because you can see me.
So it was just one of those things where a lot of stories and touching things where you're like, wow, 20 years, we did something that still has an impact on people. And that's what I hope to achieve with music. Yes, I want to make money. Yes, I want to be able to promote and find new fans, but ultimately that's, to me, that was a pinnacle. So that was exciting, and it was just all real off the cuff, like, I got to do this. I can't just let this pass up, and so to see so much activity was really cool. But then we also got notified that two of our songs were used in the Young and the Restless, two of our Christmas songs.
Nice.
Which if those of you outside the U.S., The Young and the Restless is a soap opera, and I don't know if that makes some, if that translates around the world, like a telenovela.
trashy serial TV.
Daytime, they've been running since, I don't know, the 70s at least. And so I thought, okay, I want to see how they used it. It was two of our Christmas songs, like I said, and I suffered through one whole show listening, like, and they put so many commercial breaks in it that I kept having to, like, fast forward. I was watching on YouTube TV, so sometimes you can fast forward, sometimes you can't, and I finally got to the end of the first one and realized I spent an hour watching the wrong episode. So then somebody else went and found it for me, so I didn't have to do that. So good couple things happening. And then to kind of transition and what we're going to talk next, I ended my break. Well, it was kind of like right when I came back to work. I went down to Austin to check out the hotel and some of the venues that we're going to be hosting the conference at. And I am super excited. It's going to be great. The only bummer while I was there is I completely lost my voice.
Which always happens to you at these things. So.
But this was from being sick. I got really sick at the end of it. So I was really sick. And Danielle, who was down there with me, that many of you that listen to the podcast have met at our conference, she helps us put it on. she had to order my food. It was that bad. Oh, we were in a noisy place. I just couldn't talk. But we had to go at this point in order to make a few things happen. So that being said, DIY Musician Conference happening August 16th through 18th in Austin, Texas. I've been to see the place and walk through it, kind of how we'll experience it together, imagining all of you there with me. Speaking of getting teary-eyed, I got a little misty-eyed. I got excited, and I just
imagining
the
future.
Because I just love being with our artist community.
We're very sensitive people.
We are. We're sensitive guys. But just imagining all the good times and memories and just special moments we'll have together. And get your tickets now. $99 early bird, DIYMusicianCon.com. Go there, get it. Get your hotel room situated as well. The hotels are $50 cheaper a night, so you'll save a ton of money over what you paid in Nashville. It's a great hotel, an awesome lobby, restaurant, bar, kind of hub, and Starbucks all hub the lobby. Very different than the Omni last year, where things felt kind of separated. But the lobby is just kind of this big hub with all these cool tables and chairs and a bar and a restaurant and Starbucks. So it'll be just the place to be.
And you were really excited about the venue, not the venue of the conference, but the music venue that we're going to be.
Yes. The number one thing I've been getting asked by artists, will there be more opportunities to play? And yes, we are working on that. And if you want to get advance notice and submit for performance opportunities, get that early bird ticket, because we give people access, people who buy the early bird ticket first access to that submission portal. But yes, we're going to a venue called Cheer Up Charlie's. You can search it on the web. Very cool venue. It's almost like a compound because there's like some food trucks. There's like outdoor spaces where people can sit and talk and not disturb the music. There's this building that I described as a psychedelic ski lodge.
Wow. In Austin?
Like that because it was kind of cold. It was like 40 degrees that night. And in Austin, everyone looked like they were about to go snowboarding because it was, you know, for them, that's like freezing.
Right.
But it is kind of like this lodgy feel. And then there's this outdoor stage, much bigger outdoor stage that has this giant rock wall behind it that's all lit up. Both stages are great and amazing. The sound systems are awesome. You're going to want to be on this stage. So get that early bird ticket, and we'll be sending you information to submit. We're going to try and have potentially an open mic in one of the stages going every night and program music every night. So that's just going to be the hub, the place to be at night. And it's more of a hang place, too. That's what I like about it. It's not just, I'm either in the venue or I'm out on the street and got to go find something to do. And all it's on Red River in Austin, which is where a bunch of venues are. So right next door will be another venue, and there'll probably be bands playing there. And it's just a great place. So DIYMusicianCon.com, get your tickets, get your hotel, and we can't wait to see you there.
Sweet.
And lastly, Chris and I will be at Folk Alliance in February. And we're going to be trying to bring a little bit of the DIY Musician Conference experience there. We're going to do a live podcast taping. We're going to do a separate session with some artists, an artist
meetup.
Yeah. And then we've got a room that we're sponsoring the showcases and such. So we'll be hanging out.
And that's in Montreal in February. And Folk Alliance, besides our own conference, Folk Alliance is my favorite music event. I love going. If you have a high tolerance for acoustic guitars and banjos and fiddles, you'll get a lot out of it.
Yes. So with all of that out of the way, lots of great stuff happening. We hope to see you out on the road. Folk Alliance, DIY Musician Conference in Valencia, Spain, DIY Musician Conference in Austin, Texas. Lots of good stuff. Check the web for all those details. All right. Today, we're going to be talking about 25 ways you're sabotaging your own music career. And that might sound a little harsh, or maybe not. Just depends on who you are. But this is how we started talking about, came up with this topic this week. At the top of the show, I said that we announced $100 million earned by our artist. I should emphasize earned by our artist, not CD Baby, because somebody like totally was trying to burn me down on Instagram stories and then realized they read it wrong and came back and apologized.
Oh, well, that's big of them.
Like screw you, CD Baby. You should lower your prices if you made $100 million. No, we did not make $100 million.
You did.
You did. And we were celebrating that. But the thing that was interesting is we announced something that's so awesome like that, and all these small vocal minority just get up there and are so upset about it.
Yeah.
And feel like, why can't they be happy for the independent artist community? Why can't they see this as, this means there's opportunity for me. It means there's no barriers. I just have to create music and connect with an audience that likes that music. And we, you know, there's no barriers. So we started talking about that. And
there's certain archetypes of people, right? And particularly on that one, it's like the type of person who's like, well, I didn't earn much of that, so clearly you're screwing me or something. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's not what the message is here.
It's not like we got money and decided, oh, we like you, here's some money. We don't like you, here's some money. This is by everyone's individual and somewhat collective efforts. But so we were just talking about there's this that kind of attitude and sort of sabotages someone's career. And we started thinking, what are all those things that people do that sort of just sabotage their own success? And where they just get in the way of themselves. So we've got a list of 25.
So we're going to talk trash about 25 kinds of
no,
people.
No.
But I am a few of these people. So we're also talking trash about ourselves.
Oh, yes. Yes. And these aren't all like you're a jerk. Most of these are just things and habits and just trying to address the idea of like sometimes it's just you're in the way of yourself. Those you know, people that were being unkind online, that was just the inspiration for this discussion. Uh-huh. That wasn't the point of the discussion. So,
although it is very closely related to our first.
Yes. So number one of our 25 ways you're sabotaging your own music career. Why don't you lead us off, Chris?
You refuse to celebrate the successes of other artists or the artist community. What the heck?
Yes.
So this goes back to a discussion I had with my wife. We talked about envy or jealousy of musicians about other musicians, and I told her, I'm like, I am never ever jealous of anyone who's got a lot more than me if I feel like they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are so many people that they look at someone who has earned more money or gotten some kind of attention for doing something that they can't deal with it, that they don't have it, and so they get pissed and they come out of the woodwork when you do something like something general like, hey, CD Baby community earned this much money. But also, if I post something on the DIY Musician blog that's like, hey, this particular artist did this cool thing and got all this attention or made this much money, you know, like a particular specific success story, there's a whole bunch of people who are like, I don't care, doesn't relate to me, screw them. Like really?
Yeah, to me, that's the big missed opportunity there is to learn from other people's successes.
Right.
Like, what did they, I mean, that's what started this podcast in the first place. When I was taking calls at CD Baby, someone would call in and say, oh, I started doing this thing on YouTube, and I started getting tons of fans. I'm like, all right, hold on. Let me take some notes. Tell me all about it, because I want to know and see what I can learn from you. I would say the area where I might struggle with this comes down to getting gigs. And because it's like,
say more.
That's where I feel like I'm competing with other artists. And I struggle with looking at other artists as the competition for a place on that stage.
Right.
And to me, so it's not a matter of like celebrating, not like if having a hard time celebrating their success, but like, oh man, that band got that gig. We were trying to get that gig. We're so much better than them. So that's where I would say I struggled with it for a while. But at the same time, I should have, well, I did some, but that band also doesn't exist anymore, taken that energy and built relationships with those people, because sometimes they're going to be up, sometimes we're going to be up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we can open for them, maybe vice versa, or maybe something explodes for them, we become friends, and we get to ride their coattails. You know, so it's just kind of trying to... That's where I struggled with it.
Yeah. Well, I think another thing that happens is when there are these success stories, if they involve something that appears, this is a bad word, gimmicky. And obviously for the artist that's doing it, it's not a gimmick. It's their voice. It's their thing. But then you're like, oh, isn't it cool that this polka band is doing all Drake covers and made a bunch of money? And artists are like, well, I'm not going to do that. That's stupid or whatever. Are they like, well, no one says you had to do that.
Yeah.
This is just one example of a way of succeeding. And if you keep your eye on 300 different examples.
Yeah. Inspirational strike.
Yeah, something might, you could combine a few of them, yeah, or you might find one that resonates.
Is there a polka band that did
no,
Drake
I don't know. I just made that up. But
we're probably distributing them.
Yeah, right. It's true.
All right, number two. Unwilling to evolve. It was not better in the 60s. And even if it was, you're not going back there. If you and the kind of archetype that's you're blaming your lack of success on changes in the industry.
We hear this all the time.
Those of you
constantly.
Those of you who were privileged enough to be at our conference in Valencia last year, someone was speaking from the stage, not related to CD Baby, and someone from the audience literally shouted, it was better back then, or it was better in the 60s. I think that's what it was. They said, literally said, everything was better in the 60s. And I looked around the room and I said, if this was the 60s, none of you, unless I or whoever was in charge said so, would even have the opportunity to have a music career. So how is that better?
Right. Yeah. It was better for the 1% of 1% or whatever it was that actually
the 1% got selected, and the 1% of those that actually had successful enough careers to have, you know, successive releases, you know, on a label.
Yeah, it was great for them. But I think all of this has to do with that. We talk about this a lot, but that's a sense of bitterness of like, if you're spending more of your energy on that and on the bitterness and on what's changed, you're not looking at the opportunities that exist now. And I know I've probably said this three times already, but young artists take it for granted that this is the world we live in. Streaming, yeah, you know, long-distance collaboration, all these things. It's just that's how the world works. They don't lose sleep over anything. They just get to work. They make music, yeah, and they try to find opportunities as they exist today.
Change is hard. And I don't say that lightly. It is hard. And it is hard if you felt like you knew how the system worked in the past and maybe benefited from it in some way, and now you're not. Well, it's not going to go back. It's just not. And we have a very hilarious call. I didn't even give you a heads up or email. I didn't even give you a heads up because I want the humor to hit you fresh.
Okay.
About just how much things have changed, and you're going to love it. It's hilarious. All right, number three.
Oh, think you are someone who thinks a live show should be completely spontaneous. This is the whole thrust of Tom Jackson's career, basically, as a live music producer, that you can't wing it. Or at least once you're highly prepared, you can wing certain aspects of it. But yeah, the set's not the time to just...
Especially as an independent artist, like to me, the example that I always see in my head is Radiohead. I love Radiohead. I've never seen them live, but I've watched a lot of videos online, and they sound amazing. The production's great. But if I took all of that away, they're actually very boring. They're just standing there. But it doesn't matter. They're Radiohead.
Except Tom York does his weird flailing dance thing.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter for Radiohead because they have such a mega audience and their fans are married to them, as Tom Jackson would say. That is not the case for most independent artists. And even if your fans are married to them, chances are you're still trying to grow your audience and be dynamic. And I've been in a band where, not Small Town Poets, because we actually used Tom Jackson with great results. I've been in a band where the idea of even talking about this, two of the members got physically agitated. Like they could not even look us in the eye and got irritated and didn't really hang out. It was like, wow, that's such a problem for some people. What is the deal?
I've dealt with that too. I mean, I think at some point I thought like that too. If someone was like, hey, we want to take our live show to the next level and we're going to basically like craft moments and rehearse not just the songs but also how we look, where we stand, how we move, all that stuff, I would have been like, screw you, that's not art. But like now I'm older, I'm like, that's all nonsense.
Yeah.
But I mean, also that involves a certain amount of, you have to look at yourself and maybe watch a video of your show and actually be like, was it boring? And you know, we don't like to do that.
Yeah,
we want to just think it's all glorious.
One of the best lines I've heard Tom Jackson say is, you spend years and years and years developing your craft as a instrumentalist and songwriter, and your maybe your vocal talents. You spend years developing that so you can go in the studio and make a record. Why would you just randomly walk on a stage for the first time and be amazing? Unless you actually think about it and see that as performance as a different craft than writing and recording and producing. So, and I think we get this email and comment a lot from folks on the performance side where they say, you know, venue won't pay me, or everyone just ignored me while I played. And it's like, maybe the product you're presenting is not interesting.
Yeah.
So let's start there.
And particularly, maybe it's not visually interesting, because if someone doesn't know your music and you're just in the corner of a bar, the visuals are probably more important in terms of engaging. And, you know, like, so don't expect that your amazing music will capture someone as amazing. They got to see something.
Yeah. All right. Lead us on.
All right. Where are we? Number four. You think that because you're good, someone else should do the work. I'm so good, I shouldn't have to hustle. And then I was going to add to this, because you think like that, you also don't figure stuff out on your own. You're not willing to, like, stay up until 3 a.m. and figure out the code for whatever's broken on your website, or just the little tasks that are a pain in the ass. But, like, you know, you got to dig in and figure this stuff out. So I see that with so many people come to me and ask me for various kinds of help. I'm like, wait, this, I put this info on the blog. Just do it. I'm not doing this for you.
Yeah.
I'm not staying up managing your career.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to work. I've got video games to play, Chris.
Right.
That didn't make the list, but that's like, oh, man. I don't want to give that tip out for people to stop playing video games, because it's like, well, hey, keep playing video games. I'll just I'll pitch
working.
My songs.
Right.
Your songs will go.
Well, and all of that comes down to that idea of like, oh, yeah, I'm so good, so everyone should do something for me. And then you think people owe you stuff. Your fans don't owe you anything. No one in the industry owes you anything. No one is going to do a damn thing for you if you're not doing it for yourself.
Yeah, especially now. And the more I talk to, like, people that work at labels or just watch how the industry's changed, the way Small Town Poets got signed in the 90s wouldn't happen again. I mean, obviously, back then, there weren't social networks. The internet was just starting to take shape. And, you know, we were still sitting on rocks and sitting by campfires.
Sticks, yeah.
There was no expectation that an artist could do much on their own. Now there is a high-level expectation that you will have developed these things on your own.
Yeah.
Very rare is it that, hey, we just found this diamond in the rough. That can happen. But labels are not, they're taking a risk. And so labels, managers, booking agents, all these people, you know, leave the labels last on the list. But like a booking agent, a manager, all those people are going to look at what you've done. If you haven't done anything, they don't want to do it for you. They want to be able to make money.
Yeah. And then you get mad because other people aren't doing stuff for you because you're such a brilliant genius. Well, here's the deal. We all think we're geniuses. Like, just because your family and a few people in your hometown told you were great, like, doesn't mean you need a manager right out of the gate and that you're going to get signed right away. Like, stop. No. Get to work.
Yeah, get to work. Hustle. All right. Is it my turn? I believe it is.
Number five.
Marketing my music isn't cool. And this is different than the hustle one. This isn't that somebody's not willing to hustle. Same band.
I was going to say, this is the same reaction that you'll get from those people who were, like, bristling at the idea of having to craft a show.
You probably don't need me to say this, but that band doesn't exist anymore. but also, when that band was playing a lot more, that was when we were doing some shows together and here in the Portland scene and playing typically once or twice a month, not necessarily us together, but that band were playing around. And so we were playing with a lot of different local bands. And I just saw that attitude over and over again, because people would, you know, find out, oh, you work at CD Baby, and, you know, find out I do marketing. And so they'd start asking questions, and some people would, it wouldn't even be like somebody, the last character, you know, number four where it's like, I'm just too good. It wasn't even necessarily that. It'd be like people sometimes would even be really interested, but they'd be like, oh, man, yeah, it's all great, but it sounds awesome, but that's it. Man, I just feel like we wouldn't look cool if we did that. Or
yeah.
It'd like,
God forbid you or you be know, seen doing something intentional to get people to like your music.
Yeah, or like, man, it just doesn't, it's not cool to just be out there like promoting ourselves. And like, well, have fun.
Right.
I hope your live show is so amazing that people build an audience, which can happen. That can happen. But
well, and marketing your music doesn't mean you're like flipping a cardboard sign on the side of the highway. It's like you can find a cool, interesting way to, quote, market your music. Like,
somebody should try that. Some place that's in traffic, because everyone's probably listening to Spotify or Apple Music. Like, turn
to
so-and-so now.
Just have the Spotify logo.
You'll love it. Help me get off the streets. Just stream my track.
This is great. I'm going to do it.
We should. We should. Honk if you love Chris Robley.
Yeah. Well, if for no other reason than it would be, make a good Facebook video.
Yes.
So,
yes.
All right.
Yes. All right. On to number six. You're up.
Someone else will, you think that someone else will have your best interest in mind. I guess this kind of goes back to a little bit of the thinking someone else will do stuff for you. But basically, it's like no one's going to care about your music and no one's going to be as motivated to do the right thing for your music as you.
Well, and I don't even necessarily think it goes back to the person that thinks other people should do it for them. I think like we this was actually something I think we struggled with in Small Town Poets, being signed to a label, especially going into the second album, making the second album, that realizing and also all of us realizing at different places some years later that, hey, those people, they were nice people. They had good intentions, but they didn't necessarily have our best intentions in mind. They're trying to do a job, and they're trying to keep their job, and they keep their job by moving units or whatever, but they're not necessarily thinking about our artistic vision or our financial situation individually, or, you know, if this is the best representation of us, or, you know, our relationship with our fans, all that thing, and just kind of thinking like, oh, we know that person's a good person. We don't need to check in with them, and we don't need to, you know, kind of be sort of act like their employer, which in a lot of relationships with like a booking agent or manager, that is, you are employing them, you know,
right.
You don't work for them. And I think that's where people struggle, just kind of like you get to that point where you've been hustling for so long and you get to the point where you start needing to build a team and realizing that the work didn't just go away, that you still, and yes, you can get great people working for you, but you still have to make sure that your vision is what they're working on.
Well, and I think it's not necessarily that those entities are trying to take advantage of you or have some ill will. It's
no,
just that
no.
They're locked into a system and a way of doing things that makes sense for them. It's the way things have been done. And it reminds me of this story of from Joe Pug. He has that Working Songwriter podcast. And he was saying that basically for years and years and years, he was just constantly touring, doing the long tours. And it wore him down, and he got to a point where he's like, this isn't healthy for me. And I don't know if it coincided when he started having kids or something. But for his reality, he said to his booking agent and his manager, like, I won't do that anymore. I need to do, like, 3 or 4 day long weekend trips. So you guys got to book my tours that way. And I guess he got a lot of pushback and like, oh, well, we're not going to get you booked anywhere. That's not how tours are run.
Yeah.
We can't do that. It's just not how you do it. And he's like, okay, well, then I won't do anything. I'll walk away from it all. And then I guess they were like, oh, crap, let's accommodate you and your vision for your life. And he said, like, there was no hitch at all. It was totally fine. It worked great. His life, it makes sense now. Like, so it's not that they were trying to actively cause him harm. They just weren't. Yeah, like saying synced up with his vision.
Well, and for them, they make money by booking shows. And if they think, hey, we could easily book you 2 weeks straight, 3 weeks straight, and cha-ching, that's money for us.
Right.
But you have to go out and do these shows and say goodbye to your family and try and piece your life back together. And yeah, so those, yeah, that's a good example of what I had in mind with that. Like that just there's things that, you know, it's not people are trying to rip you off or steal from you. It's just like, you got to understand that it's your artistic vision and you got to maintain that with the more people you bring on board. So I think you should do number seven to be true to our character, our personas to the podcast.
Number seven, my favorite one on this list. You're a dick.
Sorry to all the young folks that are listening. But they play that, they say that word in primetime TV now.
Oh, we're good then.
Okay, we're good. We're good. Or cable TV at least.
Yeah.
In Europe, you can say whatever you want.
So, yeah, these people are plentiful in the music world. Jerks, assholes,
yeah,
divas.
Yeah. I don't know that we need to go on and on about it, because I think we all have experienced that person where you're like, wow, you're so talented, but I can't stand being in the same room with you. I can't stand the sight of you. I don't even want to think about working with you.
Yeah.
It happens.
There's a few people I'm thinking of that have the reputation of being joyless band leaders and basically being controlling to the point of like sucking all the air out of the room and kind of berating people. I'm like, why? You're just going to go through band members and make your own life harder. They're going to quit every 3 months. And so, yeah, don't be a jerk.
Number eight, you are unreliable or flaky. Now, this does not mean you're a jerk or you're mean-spirited person. You could be the most lovely person on the planet, but if you've listened to this podcast enough, some of the interviews we've had with club bookers or press people or managers or whatever, especially club bookers, this will get you a bad reputation in your town super fast. I mean, club bookers have a lot of pressure. They're probably all underpaid, and they're dealing with a lot of people asking a lot of things of them, and they have to make judgment calls. And if you're unreliable or flaky and for whatever reason you don't show up or you can't get back to people or even just like flaky with responding to emails, like you have an opportunity and then you just kind of blow it off and don't respond for a while, that is always something that's going to sabotage your music career.
So this is something I am self-conscious about, because before I had my daughter, I think I was very reliable. I mean, I still think I'm very reliable, but something happened when I had a kid where circumstances of your life are up in the air to a larger degree. And
they're in shambles. That's
they're
what
in shambles. Well, and so I'm thinking of this specific example, but I think this has happened, you know, a few times in the last like 6 years since my daughter was born. But I had a radio thing set up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I was going to go down there. It was like, you know, play 4 or 5 of your songs and like an hour-long interview, like a good radio feature. And I had to reschedule it, I think, 3 different times because of circumstances of just logistics. And then something, it just fizzled. Like, I never even went down there. It never happened. And I think it might have been because, like, the woman, like, the DJ was just like, dude.
Yeah.
Like, just get down. Like, because otherwise this is wasting more of my time. And then so now I'm just horrified that I'm like that all the time, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But
And when I say your life is in shambles with the, it's not that with the kid, it's not that children are bad. It's just, it's something you can't teach someone what it's like to have a child.
Right. And how you have no control over your time anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing that goes along with the unreliable flaky thing though, something we were talking about at lunch, is just the kind of drug substance, the effects that will have on your reliability is pretty severe in a lot of cases.
Yes. If you're in music communities, you'll probably have talked to somebody where this has impacted their music career, not necessarily themselves, but by working with other people where somebody had a problem and just became so unreliable, flaky. I mean, you see it all the time with like some of those superstar bands or stories that, you know, back in the day of Behind the Music, where it always came down to drug abuse. There's always like 35 minutes in, and then they were all drug abuse.
It was a template.
Yeah, it actually got templatized pretty much. But yeah, so those kind of things all will make people not want to work with you. And so, all right.
All right, number nine, you're a bad hang. So this doesn't necessarily mean you're a jerk, doesn't necessarily mean you're unreliable, but no one really wants to hang around. Maybe you're super awkward. Maybe you're...
Yeah.
Maybe you never ask anyone questions and you just talk all the time.
That's what I was thinking when I wrote that on there, when we put this list together. It's like somebody that I had it in my mind, like being at a cocktail party or a party. It doesn't have to be a cocktail party, but like you're talking with people, you're just hanging socially, and someone just comes up and does a sales pitch. I've had this happen to me at conferences one in San Francisco where I was literally in a conversation with somebody. It was, you know, light. It was, but we were specifically talking about somebody, and somebody just walked up, didn't even really join in, but just started giving us their sales pitch. I'm like, that, it's not like, it's any chance a relationship is completely annihilated, but you're really starting from the bottom.
Right. Yeah. That's, you think back, it's like of all the, whatever you'd say, the deals that end up happening, of all the collaborations that end up working, like how many of them started with like a hard sales pitch?
Yeah.
Probably not too many.
And so realizing that also, you know, as far as like building a network in your community, being somebody that, you know, you don't have to jump in all at once. You can build slow, build relationships, but also the idea of like if you're a player or a band, like that's why I got the gig with Small Town Poets when they were reforming the band. The person that they knew it wasn't going to be a long-term solution, but they couldn't stand being on the bus with him.
Right.
It's like he was far better technical player than me, but so much of life on the road in a music career is just being together,
right.
And if people can't hang out with you, that's a challenge.
Well, and I was talking trash about being awkward. We're musicians. We're all awkward. I don't mean it that way. Like, you can be shy. You can have your quirks. But I mean the person who can't read social cues when they're basically doing the hard sales pitch or, like, driving someone else nuts.
Yeah.
Not that you have some personality quirks. Like, of course we all do.
I'm terrible at small talk, so the social cue I'm always reading is, I'm really boring these people and they're uninterested. I'm just going to go away. which leads us into the next one. Number 10, don't know how to build authentic relationships, and kind of the idea of like, okay, if I'm trying to make something happen in this town or this maybe even online community, because we can connect all around the world, how can I go about this in a way? I may have a goal in mind. I may have, you know, I want to get that gig at that venue or connect with this band or this like music supervisor or something like that. But how can we tend to jump to what we want. Like, I want this song placement. So I'm just going to email that person and say, place my song, as opposed to think, okay, how can I make this relationship, whether it's professional or personal, more authentic, and not in a fake way, but just like, like we said, someone doesn't want to come meet someone for the first time and the first words out of their mouth is giant sales pitch. You know, find some commonality, build real relationships, and so much more will open up for you, because people, you know, then they'll look at you as, oh, you're a real person and you got these cool things going on, as opposed to, oh, here comes the salesman.
Right. I remember when I first signed my music up with CD Baby, you would get this like tome email sent to you by Derek, the founder of CD Baby. And, you know, it was if you printed it out, it was probably 90 pages long. It was huge and all just random thoughts and advice. And I think the whole thing began with this little piece he called The Music Industry is High School. And it was all about kind of preparing yourself for all the bad stuff about how you cliquishness and the in-groups and out-groups, cool kids and all that stuff. But there was also like the more what we're talking about now is that nothing gets done unless it's relationships built. Like, it's about having friends. And you want radio play? Have a friend. Like, you want to get a cool producer? Be friends with them. Like, just have friends.
Yeah.
Build relationships. So.
And a lot of the people that may be, you know, just working at low-level positions at places, or, you know, this artist that has talent but really doesn't have much going on, and you're building relationships, authentic relationships, people progress,
right,
get bigger and better jobs, get better, bigger and better gigs, and they're going to look to their friends for support and opportunity and things like that, as opposed to just random people, you know. So,
yeah, and not always looking up the food chain or whatever. It's,
yeah. All right, let's see if we can pick up the pace a little bit.
So let's see, where are we at? Number 11, you expect overnight success.
I think this one's pretty self-explanatory, but we see it happen all the time. New artist expects overnight success, and then they really get frustrated and just give up.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It goes back to the thing of, you think something's owed to you. This should have happened by now. And I see in the blog a lot people saying, like, you know, I thought I was going to be I thought my career was going to be made by now. I'm like, how old are you? Oh, I'm like 19. What? Or I'm 23. I'm like, when I get it. I remember how that felt.
Yes, 23. It feels like my life's almost over. I'm almost 24.
Yeah, this is a lifetime pursuit. Your success isn't going to... And you know what? When you succeed, you're going to still feel like you haven't succeeded.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Always something else.
There's always something else. And whenever you hear people like overnight success, yes, there are some edge cases where that may truly be the case. But most people, where you look at them feeling like it's an overnight success, there was 10 years of toiling that you just didn't see because you didn't know who they were.
Right.
And things just built to a breaking point where now their exposure is wider. So, yes. All right.
Number 12.
Never asking for help.
I'm guilty of this one.
I am as well.
I think that I got so... at a certain point, let down by other people that I was relying on, that I took it all on myself, musically, creatively, promotion, booking, all of it, just did. And then that just became my thing. Like, I didn't play well with others anymore. And so then I got bitter about certain things not happening. And my wife was like, yeah, but you never ask anyone for help. Yeah. I'm like, why aren't I on a label? She's like, did you ask any labels to take your records? I'm like, no. Did you shop your album around? No. Well, ask someone.
Yeah, I'm guilty of this with my own band members. Like, I'll just take the brunt of the work on myself and feel sort of guilty for asking people to help, or feel like, by the time I explain this to you...
Mm-hmm. Sometimes just, you feel like it's easier.
It's easier to do it, and it's like, but if I just actually tell them, then I can keep having them do this thing as opposed to feeling like I need to do it. So, yes, asking for help, asking your fans, asking your family and friends, and then asking industry people if the time arises where you do need help, and doing it in a wise way.
Well, and I get this also extends to how I communicate with my audience, because I'm... Now, you know those types of people that every week you get a message and they're like, hey, vote for me for this thing, or like, hey, I'm doing, like, stop with your asking. So I don't ask at all, hardly, but I need to. It's like, hey, new album's out. It would mean a lot to me if you check, go to Spotify or whatever. Like, I have a hard time with that.
That's what I liked about that campaign I did about the 20th anniversary of our second album, is I emailed, I forget the subject line of the email. It was kind of asking a question, sort of in an intriguing way. But I asked him, I think it said 20th anniversary, does it still hold up? And so I was asking them basically, does this album still hold up after 20 years? And weigh in on Facebook. And I linked to the post where I'd posted it. And so people were answering that question. So people were emailing and responding as if I ultimately didn't care what, I wasn't looking for album reviews.
Right.
But what I got was exactly what I was looking for. People expressing their thoughts about the album. And it worked. Just the way I asked it and linked them to Facebook where they could go weigh in. And so.
Yeah.
You got to ask. And even when I put that together, the same thing, I was like, oh, is this too salesy? Or what if nobody goes and I feel stupid?
Because we're afraid to market our music.
What's next?
You have no direction or goals. You don't have an overarching strategy, and you do these one-off things, and they're not intended to build on the next step, whether that's how different pieces of content relate to each other, or how you're going to do some stuff that leads people to buying your record or whatever. There's no, what's the word? Yeah, end goal.
Yeah, well, there's no, when you don't have a goal, you don't have a direction. I'm putting together a presentation. I'm going to be speaking at the NAMM show in a couple weeks, and I'm supposed to be talking about marketing. And I was going to hit on this point that you can't effectively market your music if you don't know what you want your fans to do. So you got to start with that question, what do you want your fans to do? And then the next slide I was going to put I can answer that. I want my fans to, and then this giant list of everything
right,
that we tend to try, we expect in one email. They're supposed to go do all these things. I'm like, no, that's not how you put together effective communication. You need a goal. I want my fans to follow me on Spotify. So how do I create a campaign to get more followers on Spotify? Mm-hmm. Now we have something tangible, and that's what we mean by goals. And you need bigger career goals, too. Like, in a year, I want to make this happen. I want to be playing at that next level venue. And those just help give you something in your mind to shoot for so that, one, you can track progress and go, you know what? I did it. I made it. Because like we just said a few minutes ago, success, we're always like, even when we made it, we didn't feel like we made it.
Right.
And so it's like, it's nice to do those retrospectives and like, I had these little goals along the way and I'm making it. So,
well, and when you have the goal or the strategy or whatever, it helps you say no to things too. Like you can say, is taking that gig going to help me achieve my goal? Maybe not.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Number 14 is a quick one. Assuming all your fans are on your favorite music service. This is one of the big shifts that we've seen in the music industry. That when you talk about your music and you link your fans places, they're not all at the same spot. 5 years ago, you could send a link to iTunes and a link to get the CD. You would cover pretty much 99% of your fans. Now they're going everywhere. They're going to Apple Music, Amazon, Pandora, all these different services, Spotify, Deezer. And especially if you build a global audience outside of the U.S., there could be music services you never heard of. We've got lots of listeners all around the world. And in their country, there may be some other services outside of some of the majors that tend to be pretty much everywhere around the world. So we have a tool called Here Now that...
I was just going to make that plug.
That solves this problem for you. So if you use CD Baby for distribution, go to your dashboard and click on the thing for a one-page marketing site for your release. It solves that problem for you. But yeah, that's something you got to start thinking. And if you don't, and just... Because Spotify's kind of got a lot of buzz right now. If all you're sending is Spotify links, you could find out that 70% of your fans aren't there, and they're not going to go there because they're not going to jump a music service just for you.
Yeah.
All right, next one.
Okay, let's see where we at. You are not looking at the available fan data, of which there is now quite a bit.
Yes. Just, you got to get in there. The services I recommend are, one, the trending reports we have at CD Baby. There's lots of data in there about where your fans are and what's performing on Apple Music, iTunes, and Spotify. There's Spotify for Artists, and there's Next Big Sound. I highly recommend signing up at Next Big Sound. All those three places will give you data from different sources and help you parse through that. And there's sometimes things are performing well in places that you didn't expect. It also gives you an insight into that bullet point that we just talked about that, oh, wow, now that I actually look at it.
My fans are actually on Deezer or whatever. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Yep. And I mean, obviously there's, you know, Google Analytics for your website. There's Facebook Insights for page activity and Facebook Ads Manager data you should be looking at as well. All right, what's next?
16. Wow, we're gonna have to pick up the pace. Right. We gotta roll. We got some great fan, our listener emails and phone calls that we gotta get to.
All right, we'll rush through it. Okay, so 16, you get stuck in your past and you keep reworking old music. We've talked about this a lot. Stop doing it. Move ahead. Either put the thing out or just realize it was out. Stop trying to fix the past. Otherwise, you're George Lucas with the who can never let go of Star Wars.
Yes. I get this mentioned all the time with artists. In fact, the podcast, we've had a couple emails that we've read recently on recent episodes, but I get this question constantly. Like, I've got this old album. I'd like to rebrand it. Just forget.
Yeah, stop.
Don't forget about it. And I'm not talking about remixes or acoustic versions or things like that. That's all great. What I'm talking about is I want to go back and remix this again or have it remastered or now we're a different band name. You're never going to move forward if you keep doing those things. It's out. Move forward. I know as an artist, it can be scary. Like if you really like that album, it can be scary. Can I ever do that again?
Mm-hmm.
Can I make an album that I love as much as that one? And you just got to move forward. You're not going to if you just keep tweaking that old one. It's never going to get to your perfection the way you think it should be.
There's always more good ideas out there.
Yeah. All right. Number 17 kind of goes along with that. Not focusing on releasing music. We are in a era where releasing music causes momentum that really is beneficial to you. And so we should have position ourselves to be in a more regular release pattern. The idea of I'm going to make a record and go away for 3 years and make another record. It's just, look at the, even the major label artists are not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. The way these streaming platforms work, it really benefits you to keep releasing. It doesn't mean you have to do a song a day. It doesn't mean you have to do a song a month. But just the idea of getting in a habit of releasing more music, that it doesn't have to be this so precious thing. And it doesn't have to be a giant fuss you make about it when you do release it.
Right. Don't, yeah. It's like the Chinese democracy problem. Where are we at? Not collecting email addresses. Then you have this note that says, it's an online identity.
A lot of times we talk about marketing and people are like, email, that's, do people even read email anymore? They absolutely do. Email marketing is still far more effective than anything you can do on social. However, even if you aren't emailing your fans, you should be collecting email addresses because it's an online identifier. You can do so many things if you have that email address, like remarket to them on Facebook, build lookalike list, remarket to them on Google Ads. However, I do not recommend using Google Ads unless you have some serious experience. Other things like that, where mm-hmm. you can upload that list and gain information about your fans. And ultimately, that's the only way you can own that relationship with the fan. There's no other way that currently exists online to own the relationship with the fan other than getting their email address.
Yeah, and I think a lot of artists are now reluctant to put out an email list, an email sign-up form at their gigs. Get over that. It's super powerful. Collect email addresses. Should I read the next
one
here?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, number 19, you don't practice good list hygiene or segmentation, which is a technical way of saying you've got a bunch of people on your list that aren't reading your emails, or you're sending emails to people on your list with messages that don't relate to them. Maybe you're saying, hey, I'm playing in Portland, Oregon, and the person lives in Iowa. Well, they don't give a damn. They're not going to go to the show. So first of all, you should look at your list, and if there's people who have not opened an email in 6 months, give them another couple chances. Send them a, you know, they call it a re-engagement series. Send them something that maybe gives them the chance to get back on board. But if they don't, wipe them from your list, because all that's doing is dragging down your open rate, which then MailChimp or whoever you're using is going to say, oh, this guy's not, enticing his fans with good information. Let's do some stuff, so then suddenly your emails are going to appear in even more junk spam folders.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you don't want to delete that name. You just don't want to be emailing to them, because you can still retarget them in other places and use that to build like lookalike data, fan lookalike data, people that are similar to that person.
Right.
All right. Let's see. Where are we at?
20.
Number 20. Getting mad at having to pay for reach on social. That's the world we live in. You just got to accept it. And that would be like targeting people on Facebook and
I'm not
Instagram.
Paying those people.
Yeah. Facebook and Instagram are the ones that I would start with if you're interested in doing that. But yeah, they built those platforms, and they, like, Facebook has so much information about everybody, even more so than Google, because Google knows what you've done online, what's in your inbox and things, but Facebook knows who your friends are and all those similarities and things like that. And so it can be very powerful once you learn how to target people specifically. And so instead of just being upset about it, you start thinking, maybe I need to learn. This is a whole field of fans that are ripe for picking,
yeah.
If I just look at it the right way.
Well, let's see. Number 21, you can't take criticism or critique. So this could be in the form of like, oh, I got a bad review and I will never leave the house again. I'm quitting music. Screw the world. No one understands me. I'm done. Or it could be like you're writing a song and your bandmate's like, that chorus just isn't working. And you just don't listen to them. And I mean, maybe they're wrong, but maybe they're right. And
yeah.
Are you lying to yourself about that?
Yeah. Well, and even if they are wrong, being able to take the criticism and channel it in a way that you are,
right.
Is she or he right? Are they wrong? And it's all subjective. So maybe they are wrong. Maybe they're right. But then being able to work through it makes it so much easier for people to want to collaborate with you. And we are in a world of collaboration now where people are wanting to collaborate across the web and work on projects, sometimes with people they've never even met. They've just met online and like, hey, let's exchange some tracks. And it's like, you got to be able to take criticism.
Yeah. So somehow develop thick skin while also developing your sense of generosity.
This also, I should say, you got to be prepared to take from your fans too.
Oh, take criticism. You're right.
And sometimes that's the worst one. Like, I mean, I'll do this all the time. This happened. Somebody posted something sort of condescending or negative about, I forget what it was. It was over the Christmas season. I'm like, I was commenting to the guys, oh, yeah, I saw that. I'm heading over to his house tomorrow, and I'm going to shake him down and give him a piece of my mind. But at the same time, you're like, I've gotten to a place where I'll read that stuff. I'll have my, you know, 30-second to a minute, like, and then I'll be like, I'm good. I don't need to respond.
Right.
People can have their opinions.
Throw your little inner tantrum.
Yeah.
Where are we at now?
22.
Oh, so I phrased this as you lie to yourself about the quality of your music, but I think you had a better way of putting it.
Well, because when I saw that, I was like, Chris, what exactly are you trying to say here? Like, you think you're good, but you really suck? Is that what's going on? So I said, you're afraid to admit when something is not working. After we were dialogued
a
little bit.
That's what I meant. Yeah. And so instead of fixing it, when maybe deep down you know, you rationalize moving forward with this thing that's inferior to what it could be.
And what the story you were referenced said briefly at the top of the show, how you had your band guys working on something and a couple of the songs, and you came to Portland and a couple of them just weren't working. And you could have pushed through and said, well, I don't have much time. I got these guys. They did this. I don't want to hurt their feelings.
Right.
Instead of just going, no, this isn't working, and I'm going to have to deal with the maybe uncomfortable conversation with these guys. But also, we got to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, and it's worth doing, because when you do figure it out, like I said, that is the joy of recording.
Yes.
23.
You think you're too old, niche, weird, rural, uncool to make it. Yeah. Not that those things might not present some challenges.
Right. But they're not complete barriers.
I can say with complete honesty, the last release that Small Town Poets did, I think is our best effort yet. And that's, you know, that's after a lot of like, I got behind, it's time away, reflection, and like listening with fresh ears. And I think for what we do, I think it's our best effort yet. But as we've promoted it, there's a few times where I'm like, huh, we're getting it's a little bit of pushback because we're not the young hipsters anymore.
Or, you're getting pushback because then people are expressing disinterest because you're not young?
More in that, oh, you've been around kind of thing. Or not that we've, sort of the idea that we had this segment of our career that was
high profile,
and that was our full-time jobs. And then we had a long hiatus, and then we started releasing music independently, and it's just taken a long time to get the word out, and just getting beyond the, oh, these guys are cute. They got back together.
Oh, they're still doing it.
That's so fun. And kind of the sympathy dad band card.
Yeah.
So that can exist, and I've, with the promotion of this album, have felt some of that. It can be overcome, and it's not like, that's not an issue. But yeah, there's always challenges. But just because you have those challenges, sometimes you just need to lean into them.
Yeah.
If you're weird, then maybe you just need to go weird and make the
you
weird
will find your weird fans.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's see. 24. You think your music is so unique and brilliant. It is totally indescribable, man. You just got to hear it.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't have the time. So why don't you tell? I'll give you one more chance. Tell me what it sounds like in 3 seconds. Yeah.
For some reason, this just popped into my head. Like, this was like way back in the day when we first started doing this podcast. I had an artist email me saying, our music is so unique. It's undescribable. Our lead singer has lived up in the gorge in Oregon, and he's never even heard music before, but he writes amazing music, and we're this amazing band. And I'm like, first off, I'm not buying the line that this dude, one, has never heard music, and two, how can you be good at music that I want to hear if you've never heard music? And that's impossible. And maybe like Mozart, maybe he hadn't heard a whole lot but when he was six writing all this stuff, but it's impossible to live in modern society and have never heard commercially released music. So don't give me that stupid line. And you know what I did? I deleted that email.
It's good. That's, yeah, but I still hear this all the time. It's like, well, we do like, it's like jazz rhythm sections, but like experimental electronic keyboards and then like operatic vocals. I'm like, well, you just described it. So now come up with something shorter to say that all that. It's like,
yeah,
nothing is so unique.
Yeah. Like, and the last one, number 25. Bringing it home.
All right. You want me to read this one?
Yes.
You don't seize the moment when someone shows interest in your music. And so by this, I mean, I guess maybe just what I was saying. Like now I have, you have my attention right now. So be ready to sell me on your music in a short, interesting description. Or, you know, sometimes I do this where I get uncomfortable with the attention being on me and I change the topic of conversation. Like, out of some sense of false humility or something. Like, no, I should keep the attention on me and just talk for a moment about myself because that's what we all dream about doing as musicians. But, yeah, seizing the opportunity. Again,
yeah.
Without being like the guy that sucks the air out of the room, but...
No, because if people are interested in what you're saying, if you're, you know, if I'm at a party and someone's telling a great story or has great stories, I want to hear more great stories, you
right.
know? It's not like I'm like, all right, dude, shut up now. Let's go on to this
the
guy's
expert.
Boring story. No, it's like... Hey, you've got my attention. Bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, I think having the eyes to see when something is working and what the next step might be. Like, oh, I have this group of people's attention right now. What can I do to keep that conversation, that dialogue, whether it be a musical dialogue of more music or a live stream or content or whatever? What can I do to keep that attention going? And it may be something that's unexpected. That's a lot of what I've been thinking about coming off of that campaign that we did, just the 20th anniversary of the second album. There was so much dialogue. It blew me away. I was totally unexpected. I thought it would be like, it's the day after Christmas. We're not going to see much.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything in my mind was like, how do I keep this going? How do I keep the conversation going with these people in an interesting way so it's we keep them engaged? And I wasn't expecting that. And so...
Yeah, well, and the same thing happens at live shows. Like, you have those moments where you realize everyone is really keyed into what's happening. And after that, maybe that's the time to make your pitch to sign up on email or to follow you on Spotify or buy your CD or whatever the thing is. Like, instead of just plowing right on to the next song, like, use those moments
because yeah.
That's why we make music.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's 25. We made it through.
We
wow.
Made it.
We made it through. And if you have some comments or want to weigh in about what one of those items or thought we missed some obvious ones, you can do so. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And speaking of that, we have some really good, we got two great emails, and we've got a couple calls. We'll start with the quick email, because the funny email that I've... It's a long read, but we'll start with a quick one. Hey, guys. Raleigh Keegan here, longtime listener of your podcast. I listened to the Truth About Spotify playlist, and you all said that you can link your social media pages to your Spotify profile, but all I can see is an option to link a Wikipedia page. Where can I find the spot to put social media links? Thanks for all your help and everything you do, Raleigh. At first I thought, they must have just done it wrong. But then... I checked, and it was a good reminder to highlight to our audience that there are features that are available on the desktop Spotify for artists.
Different from mobile.
That are not on the mobile and vice versa. So on the mobile app, all you can add is a Wikipedia link. But on the desktop, you can add all the social links.
Interesting.
And there's some data that you can see in the app that you can't see on the desktop and vice versa. The way it just displays it and it's like and parses the data a little bit differently. So it's good to have both and be familiar with both. But yes, the desktop is the one where you should be doing your overall, like if I'm really trying to edit and set up my profile, that's where you do it because that's where you have the most options.
Cool.
That was a quick one. Why don't we
do a call? Which one should we do first?
Let's go to the one from Brenna. Okay. She really stressed out about this.
Hi, my name is Brenna Lynn. You guys actually mentioned my name on the show a couple times, which has been super cool. I'm the one that got tacos with Chris and listened to you guys on my morning commute to college. And yes, the tuition bill is in the mail. You guys recently asked for women's opinions, and I happen to be one of those, so I thought I would call in. A listener just called in recently by the name of Rebecca, and she had questions about audio engineering tips and getting in the studio, and you guys said that you would maybe consider doing an episode on that. And I have to say, I think that might actually get a little bit messy because there's so many variables depending on what genre of music we are, what our budget is, our current technology knowledge. I think that could become a really messy episode if you just tried to, you know, tell us a bunch of audio engineering tips on a podcast. I don't think that would be the best method. So I was kind of thinking about it, and I thought what might be better is if you could just give us really good resources. You know, what are respected in the music industry resources that you can pass along to us, you know, that are free or low cost. That would be really helpful if you could just share what audio engineering blogs or websites, YouTubers, books, you know, that you would suggest or that you've heard a lot of people suggest. I think that would be a little bit more helpful and give us a little bit more direction. And in fact, if you would be interested, if you could do a podcast on just general resources for the music industry, kind of organized based on different domains of the music industry. You guys have given so much tips and advice that it might be nice to have one podcast that just lists out different domains of the industry and what you would say like the best quick resources are to get started. That way you can kind of point us in the right direction and then we can do the legwork from there. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
I really like Brenna for four reasons. One, she likes tacos. And Brenna, I hope you're coming to Austin because there are taco shops everywhere, and then we can have a taco because I was not included in the taco feast. Two, what was number two? Oh, she listens to our podcast. Three, I can tell from following her on Twitter, our sense of humor is right in line with each other. So I think she'd be a good hang. And four, I absolutely agree with this call, and that's why we've had such a hard time doing this kind of podcast. And I've even listened to, there's some home recording podcasts out there, and I've always had a hard time listening to them because it's like, it's very style specific or what the gear that person has.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, it's just a challenge to, when that's not what we talk about on a regular basis, to kind of pull it all together in one episode that makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, when she was asking for resources, even the one that is the first thing I would recommend, which is Tape Op Magazine. It's a free subscription. Just sign up. They'll send it to you for free. It's awesome. Even that is very skewed towards sort of indie rock, folk stuff. So that might, you know, it's great information, but that might not apply to hip-hop producers. Yeah. Or
one of the best things that I've come across, and I need to go back and reread it. There's a book series. It's two book series, and I believe I had the author on the podcast like ancient times ago in podcast years, like 2009 maybe. It's two books, Behind the Glass, Part 1 and 2.
That's
and
good.
All it is interviews with producers about how they record, and it's very engaging, and they do talk about techniques. They don't just talk about, oh, yes, I have to have this compressor, otherwise I don't know how to record. It's very accessible for an independent artist, for a seasoned professional, but what you will pick up is there is no right way to do it.
Right.
Because one guy will swear by a 57, Shure 57 microphone for everything, and another guy will swear by something else and say he'd never do that, you know?
Right.
And so it comes down to taste, but those two books, I'm sure they're available on Amazon. I highly recommend getting. Fascinating read. It's not just old school producers. It's, you know, the book's been out for, the second one came out maybe like 6-7 years ago. But it's got some more recent producers, and you know, up into the digital age. It's just not talking about how they made records in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would highly recommend picking up. But yeah, we'll figure out how to make it work. And I like the idea of doing a resource episode. All right, let's get on to the last email. And bear with me as I read this, but I think it's worth it because it's pretty funny. Hey, this is Kyle. I play in a band called Band of Us and have other musical explorations a-brewing for 2019. And I've been listening to the podcast for a year or so now. Thanks so much for all of the info you guys are sharing. It's an awesome community. You can find their band at bandofus.com. Just wanted to pop in and share something that I thought was humorous. I just recently was gifted an Echo Dot for Christmas, and I've been using it and wrapping my mind around the music business plan of the future as far as smart speakers, as you all have talked about. So I have it set up in my kitchen. I was listening to the podcast, meaning our podcast, on my phone speaker while making a massive salad for breakfast. Eat salad for breakfast. I like that. And was playing the episode where you were answering calls and emails. The question from, he said one girl, I think it was, I will say it was Anastasia because he says that name later. From Anastasia comes up where she mentions that Alexa isn't recognizing their artist name. As you all reading the question and say, so she says, when I say, Alexa, play Anastasia, and the name of her band he couldn't remember, it doesn't come up. Immediately, my Echo Dot lights up and says, now playing songs by Anastasia and her band name. It starts playing on his Echo because we said it on the podcast. I got a kick out of this and was able to stop the music playing so I could listen to the podcast. The music sounded nice, though. Kudos. However, when you kept mentioning the things about Alexa and said those simple magic words, it kept coming on and responding. I'm thinking, okay, this is getting out of control, but I'm still kind of laughing at it and correcting the issue. All is well until you say, Alexa, order more toilet paper. And my Alexa proceeds to order some toilet paper from Amazon. OMG. So basically, I had to just stop and figure out how to disable the device. And the real reason I'm writing is to get a refund for the $14.95 I spent on jumbo toilet paper. You can send it directly to me or simply stream our songs enough times to pay the difference. He said, okay, just kidding about the refund mostly. But you can tell Anastasia that her songs are showing up fine. I wonder if it was a matter of time before it registered somehow. Thanks again. And so that was
funny.
Pretty fantastic. I wrote him back saying that on the next episode of the podcast, that he needs to be listening to it. Without headphones, I'm going to say, Alexa, order Kevin a Les Paul.
And there it was. It's in the mail.
So, yeah, that was pretty amazing and pretty, terrifying and humorous at the same time.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, just I know that we're not exactly a computer, but we're coming out of this digital device talking to another. Eventually, computers are just going to have conversations with each other. And
yeah.
Then what are we?
Hopefully I can just sit on a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was amazing. Kyle did have a question. But and I'll get to that right now. But I love that. It's like, wow, brave new world. How do we handle that? Or just, I know I've heard people joke about their kids saying stuff and happening. But the idea that I'm listening to a podcast or even an Alexa commercial comes on my TV. Alexa, give me this. And my Alexa sitting here orders it. You know, that's their real plan.
Yes.
That's Amazon's plan. Get everybody to have these smart speakers, and on TV commercials, they're just going to make people order stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, toilet paper, it's something you're going to eventually need when you run out of what your current supply is.
So anyway, thought that was awesome. All right, his question. I do have a question. We initially distributed a song through a site that shall remain nameless because they essentially dropped their distribution service off the face of the earth and sent a message a few weeks ago saying the song would come down on January 1st, 2019. We are past that date, but the song is still live, and I have no way of telling when it will actually come down or whether it will do so on all platforms at the same time. Ah, interesting. I wish I knew what service it was because we may be able to help with that. Maybe not. My question is this. If we distribute the song through CD Baby, one, do we have to wait until the song is removed completely from all platforms or we can start the process now? And if we had a UPC and ISRC code for the track, do we have to get a new one or we can somehow use the same one and connect it? Also, is there any way to keep the same track that we already have on streaming platforms, or does it have to start completely fresh? This one's pretty easy. One, no, you don't have to wait till it comes down. In fact, especially in this situation, I would go ahead and get it redistributed. Number two, you will have to use a new UPC code, but you can use the same ISRC code, so it should match up any previous streaming data for that track. Assuming you keep all the metadata the same, don't like get fancy, oh, I want to call the band this, that, now, or whatever. As long as the metadata is the same and everything, the art and all that's the same, it should match up and pull forward any historical streaming counts that you had. And number three, I think that is handled if you use that same ISRC code. But you do have to distribute it fresh. We can't just claim that track. They have to bring it down. We have to distribute it new. So That's your answer.
Bummer that that service didn't do a handoff to another.
I have a guess of what it might be, but I'm not sure. That's why I'd be curious if he told.
We can hypothesize later.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, yeah. All right, we've got one more call.
Hey, guys. My name is Zeke Forever. I am based in Denton, Texas. And I have a question for you. I've been putting out music since I was about 16. With that being said, it wasn't the most professional. It wasn't the best quality. And so as I've been listening to your podcast, I started listening to your podcast when I was working on my last album and kind of got it mixed by like three different people, got it mastered. Really, it was just a really tough thing. It was better quality than I've ever put out before, but also still not the best. Well, this year I've been working on an album, and, you know, I have been taking my time with writing and, you know, contacting mixers and masters because I want it all to sound super cohesive. And so my question is, how do I get my audience to take me more seriously? You know, I feel like I can tell by my stats that I always have, I have fans and I have people that will listen to my music, but it's kind of like a, okay, we're going to listen to this all the way through and then we'll never revisit it again. So how do I, like I said, how do I get my fans to take me more seriously and to realize that I'm actually, you know, putting in effort this time, if that makes sense. Thank you guys so much. Y'all have helped me tremendously. I hope y'all have a wonderful day. Happy holidays.
I thought that was a very interesting question that a lot of people are probably wondering, especially when you're starting out. Like, I got to a certain level. I feel like I'm in the friends and family, maybe a little bit beyond that with some real fans. But how do I get beyond that or present an image that says, this is bigger and better than before, even if the not necessarily the music is, maybe the music sounds great already. Maybe that's not the problem. But like the idea that my artist experience or journey is getting bigger and beyond what you've heard experience in the past.
My oversimplified answer is I feel like maybe it's a little bit worrying about the wrong thing. I understand the concern, but the question shouldn't be how do you get your fans to take you seriously that your music is good? It's is your music good? And then how do you get your fans to want to try it out just to press play, because if it's good then they'll know it's good and then they'll take you seriously. Although I get that there's like managing impressions and that can affect how you hear things, but
I took his question more of like, I've got a lot of people in the friend zone and how do I
get to the next place
the next place and give the impression that, hey, this just isn't your friend screwing around on the weekends, has nothing to do,
right,
tracking some music. That may not be what he's experiencing. I'm just adding my own comment, editorial in there. But to me, what I thought was, this may be the point where you need to go through our, listen to the episode of the podcast, our Branding Bootcamp podcast,
yeah,
and really take some time and see, like, what's the artist persona I'm presenting? Is it scattered? Is it not really put together well? And start there and sort of get that own personal brand artist identity sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, honestly, one of the things I would probably recommend, not knowing anything else about other than what we just heard on that call, is getting a photographer to take some really nice pictures so you have those visual elements that signify this isn't somebody who's just playing music with an iPhone, that someone took a picture of them with an iPhone camera.
Right.
This is like, has a professional persona. But first it helps to figure out that, you know, go with the art.
Who are you?
Our
are you
authentic artist branding boot camp or whatever it, our authentic artist branding, I think is what the episode is called. I can't remember what episode it was. It was a couple years ago, but it's still great. We still present that at conferences and it's, people say it's their highlight of the conference. To me, it's figuring that out will help you start to develop that storyline and then start looking at, well, am I projecting a professional image? Because that's going to be one thing that signals to people this is different.
Yeah. Well, and then another thing that is related to that is that your friends and when you're in that friend family zone, those people might never take you seriously because they're not your fans. And if you have the other pieces in place, like Kevin's saying, like you know what your branding is, you got good photos, your music's good, and you project that outwards, you're going to have new listeners that don't know anything about you except that best self that you're presenting, and they will take you seriously right off the bat. And maybe it's not worth your time trying to convince your aunt or your coworker that you're serious, because to them you're just always you.
Yeah.
So yeah, those might not be your fans.
Correct. Yeah. So thank you for the calls and the emails. We're deep into 2019, and if you're still with us, you're deep into this episode of the podcast. And we'd love to hear what you're thinking, your plans, your goals for the year. Any questions or comments, you can call us at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And definitely, you know, follow Chris and I on social media. He's at Chris Robley everywhere. I'm at K Bruner, the letter K in my last name, B-R-E-U-N-E-R. And then you can follow my band at Small Town Poets. And you can see some of the stuff that we're doing. And, you know, we're out there in the trenches as well. And you can find us when we're out on the road at various conferences, especially Folk Alliance coming up. I'll be at the NAMM show in a couple weeks, probably a week out by the time people hear this episode. And, yeah, we just want to connect with all of you in those places. Speaking of getting people to take you seriously and the comments.
Me?
The general you.
The general you. Okay, the royal you. The royal you.
Because we also tying into that comment about age that I made. I was, you know, Small Town Poets, we did some shows here in the Northwest. My daughters haven't seen us play much because most of our massive touring days happened before I had children. And we had this show, nice venue, great lights and sound, nice audience. People were really into it. My daughters were right down front with all their neighborhood friends who just thought it was amazing. My daughters, especially my oldest, was like, having one of those, oh, dad, you're just my dad moment. I'm like, don't you know? I'm like this, I'm in this band people love. I play guitar on stage. I'm the cool dad. You should recognize that. And they're like, she's like, yeah, whatever. You just play guitar. You've played guitar ever since I've lived.
You'd be a whole lot cooler if you were a DJ.
Probably so. But the comment like, you've played guitar ever since I've known you, so whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. Nothing I can do can get beyond her seeing me as my dad first. Down the line somewhere, this guy that plays guitar in a band that looks kind of cool. I'm like, your friends thought you were a mate. They thought I was cool. Whatever. So, yeah, it happens.
At least you know where you stand with her.
Yeah. I'll have to, like, see if I feed you next week. But, yeah, so that's why you've got to have wise counsel and a feedback chamber that isn't just the echo chamber of your family or the diehard fans, you know, to get kind of balance yourself out.
Yeah.
You got to get beyond those because they're never going to see me other than certain people just aren't going to see you beyond that.
Yep. Well, I played a show last summer. My aunt came out. She's known me for many, many decades now. It was the first time she'd seen a concert, and she was like, wow, you're actually really good. I was like, did you think I was just making music into my, like, middle years just because,
that reminds me of a comment my mom made just a couple, it was like last week. I was telling her about some of the cool things we got going on at CD Baby and, you know, from early days of CD Baby, those of us still here have built this thing up to be something, you know, that I think is quite special and done a lot of work, blood, sweat, and tears. And it's very visible, have put a lot of hard work into this brand and felt passionate and done these cool things. And on the music side, just keep writing, recording, and continued to have some cool successes. And, you know, I was talking about some of the things like that placement on that we got recently and just, you know, and my mom's like, yeah, you've totally exceeded my expectations. I did not. I'm like, how am I supposed to take this? Like, you thought I was a loser? Is that what this? Or, wow, I had such amazing expectations for you and you exceeded it. But it was like, yeah, I didn't expect you to do this good. I mean, I'm like, what?
That reminded me of one last random thing at the end of the episode. Over the holiday season, I'm sure you heard Mariah Carey's song a billion times, right?
Apparently, it's the number one Christmas song, or one of the top.
Well, so I saw this meme on Facebook, and it was basically saying, like, what a burn it is that it starts with, I don't want a lot for Christmas. All I want's you. Like, you're not a lot. I was like, oh, what a great unintended insult. And then I thought there was got to be a lot of those in pop music. And, like, the next day, I heard that Rick Astley song, Never Gonna Give You Up. And yeah. There's a line in there where he says, like, he's basically saying, like, I really want to devote myself to you. I'm ready to be committed. You're not going to get this from any other guy. Like, no one else is going to see you as worthy of their commitment. It's like, I'm sure he didn't mean that.
No. That's funny. That plays right into a recent episode of This American Life that's called, the title of it's called How I Read It.
Oh, interesting.
Then how the people perceive those exact things.
The difference between what is said and what is meant.
Yeah, what is said and what is meant. And like, wait a minute, now that I think about it, this could be taken the totally wrong way. Well, that is definitely the end of the podcast, if you haven't guessed so far. Chris, it works so much better when you're in
the
room.
We can see each other.
Why don't you just move back to Portland?
Oh, yeah, I consider it.
Yeah, because what most people don't know after I do the magic of editing, and it, you know, you can pick up on it a little bit. There's sometimes a delay between when we speak and hear each other, mm-hmm. and so it sometimes makes it hard to have some of that back and forth.
Now, if I talk over you, it's just because I don't like what you're saying, and yeah. I think I should have the floor.
Yeah.
If it happens otherwise, it's an accident.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. And we're looking forward to a great 2019 and hope to see you along the way. We'll catch you later.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.